Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for the federal government attorney navigating the complex intersection of acquisitions and fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
I'm Major Ed Callahan.
Together, we are your co-hosts. And on this episode of Far and Beyond, we have a special guest with us from Army Office of General Counsel, Mr. Adam Cottle.
Hey, Ellie. Happy to be here. I am an Associate Deputy General Counsel in the Army Office of the General Counsel. My primary portfolio is acquisition reform and handling some of our PEOs and supporting them, as well as handling a significant portion of the intellectual property matters we go on, especially a lot of the acquisition reform that goes on with IP. So it's a very interesting mix of issues we're working on right now with everything that's going on in the Department of War.
And specifically, you've been very involved in the Revolutionary FAR overhaul.
Correct. I've been the Army's lead attorney on the RFO, or Revolutionary FAR overhaul, since it came out in last April. And I've been attending a number of the Defense Acquisition Regulation Council, the DAR Council meetings on this, and coordinating the Army's efforts to review and comment on the various parts of it and ensure that we have the appropriate information pushed out to the folks who really matter, those field attorneys who are out there on the daily basis working on the contracts and making sure that they have the tools they need, the information they need to be successful at advising their clients.
And we sincerely appreciate you taking out the time to come and talk to us. You just presented at our new developments course. At the time of this recording, they haven't quite released those agency deviations for us yet, but we expect that to be coming out soon and coming into effect early February, I think is what was mentioned before. So we'd love to have a conversation with you about some of the big picture concepts that are looking to change.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's the class deviations are coming out from Mr. Tenaglia's office in the next few days. Some of them come out in the next few days. Some will come out in January. And the effective date should be around February 2nd, is my understanding.
So as of now, the FAR, everything has been released for the FAR overhaul for at least the federal acquisition regulation. So now we are waiting on the class deviations. So what's next?
The executive order restoring common sense in federal procurement instructed the FAR Council, it was released on April 15th, to complete an overhaul of the FAR no later than 180 days later. So on September 30th, they were busy working, trying to get the last parts out before the government shut down. And they did an incredible job. They went through and reviewed all 51 parts. And according to the executive order, they had to reduce them to those parts which are required by statute or necessary for sound procurement principles or in accordance with executive orders. They completed that and released the model FAR parts that each agency was instructed to adopt by class deviation. The Department of War has not quite done that yet. We're going to in short order. And then that is phase one, is this model parts. Phase two is going to be the notice and comment, the formal rulemaking that we are required by the Administrative Procedures Act to go through and to issue them. They will be out there on the public street, on the street for some amount of time. We expect to receive a lot of comments. And then the Department of War has been assigned the lead agency, I think, for 16 of the FAR parts to go through and not just write the formal rulemaking part of it, but also to take the lead on reviewing the comments as they come in and to make any adjustments as necessary. That's part of the rulemaking process, is you are required to respond to the comments that come in. Along the way, of course, we still have to implement. We are still working on the FY25 National Defense Authorization Act requirements, the FY26 NDA, which was just passed this afternoon by the Senate, headed to the President's desk for signature, has some additional changes we're going to have to make. So we will be working on implementing those as we go along. And in the comments, hopefully industry, government officials, academia, as they make their comments, we'll be able to get some insights into perhaps what didn't quite go right in the rewrite. And hopefully there'll be an opportunity to fix them. And then that'll be the completion of phase two next fall, October, November timeframe, to publish in final rule form the FAR at the time. And so that should encompass the FAR and the DFARs. The Army FAR supplement, the AFARs, will be completed by then as well. And so that we'll have the full set. And then we go into whatever litigation that the private industry feels like suing us over.
Yes. So,
I was going to say, so backing up, are we expecting a lot of comments then?
Industry is probably going to submit, I would say, tens of thousands, I think is a reasonable estimate. Because if you think about the FAR is 2,500, 3,000 pages or so. They're cutting it down maybe 25-ish% of it, up to a third, depending on the parts. Some parts were eliminated entirely. DFARS is about 2,000 pages. That's a lot of stuff that we're going to have to go through, and industry has a lot to say about it. There are folks in industry have been very public. They don't think that the council went far enough in cutting things. Okay, they're entitled to their opinion. There are other folks who perhaps think we went too far in certain things. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what comments I'm able to see over this process of seeing what people thought about it and seeing the final rules. And the FAR Council says they got probably 80-90% correct. We'll see. Of course, then the question becomes, all right, well, what do the courts think about it? Because being the good attorneys that we are, we understand things like this go into litigation, that litigation can take years, and the courts may have their own opinions of whether or not the government actually followed the APA and responded to all substantive comments. More to follow, as they say, and we're going to be seeing a lot of change, I think, over the next few years. And that's, of course, not including what else is going on, because I mentioned the two NDAs. Senator Wicker, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, has spoken and written a published report last December called Rebuilding Freedom's Forge. He wants to continue to change the DFARS. He has ideas of how Department of War should be implementing and executing on its acquisition programs. And so this is not a one and done. I don't want any of our listeners to say, okay, next November, I'm done. That's the final version. That's not going to be the case. There are going to continue to be legislative proposals. There will continue to be changes over the next several years, and we're all just going to have to be trying to keep track of what's going on and what's changing today.
So in addition to industry being able to make comments on what's going on, are we also encouraging our acquisition workforce internally to make comments as they're putting the new class deviation into practice?
So yeah, so the FAR Council has on the GSA hosts the FAR website, acquisition.gov, and on it, there's a big button that says, you know, provide feedback. And so anyone is permitted to provide feedback. The Army has provided formal feedback through a process. We work with the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Procurement, her office, to provide comments. We have provided several hundred comments to date. But if practitioners have things that are like, hey, this isn't working for me, there's a concern, there's something that's not clear, they absolutely should be reaching out through their channels if they want to make a formal comment, to provide it through their contracting command to say, hey, this is an area of concern for us, or they can simply hit that button on acquisition.gov and say, I've got something to say about it, and submit those comments. They are being read. And during the notice and comment period, anybody can submit a comment there and say, this is what I think about it. And if someone has something to say, they should say so and say, this is my concern.
If I could have you just take a quick step back, we talked about the class deviation when it comes into effect. We've all heard the term, but what does a class deviation coming into effect mean for existing contracts? I assume it is controlling over all future contracts for sure, but does it affect existing contracts on the date of effect?
Okay, so a class deviation is a deviation that affects more than one contract. And so class deviations under the FAR and the DFARS can only be issued by senior officials. In this case, for a Department of War-wide class deviation that affects multiple contracts, Mr. John Tenaglia, the Principal Director of Defense Pricing, Contract, and Acquisition Policy, is the only individual authorized to issue that deviation. And that's different than the Model FAR. The Model FAR that was released from May through September of 2025 was just that. It was a model. It was not, did not have the force and effect of law. Class deviation upon the effective date in the deviation has that force and effect of law. Mr. Tenaglia has been authorized to issue class deviations to the Department of War. And so that's what when he issues them. And I understand they're issuing two batches coming up and with an effective date of February 2nd. At that point, all contracts going forward will be applied. It will be just like any other FAR DFARS change. Unless specifically authorized and required by statute, we don't typically go back and say, okay, we have to change all contracts now. The CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturation Model Certification, is a good example of that. We don't require current contracts to adopt that new DFARS clause. We aren't requiring options before they are exercised to be modified. They can be, but they are not required to include that clause. And so these will be going forward. Here's the new clauses, here are the new prescriptions. And so that's something that's going to be on a rolling basis as we go forward. And again, because there will be some changes to the notice and comment formal rulemaking process next October, November, there will be a new set of clauses potentially with some changes to some extent, and we'll go through this process again. By that point, it will be formalized in the Code of Federal Regulations.
So that begs a question. So especially with source selection, which can take several years for Part 15 specifically. A lot of times we start the source selection process, 2 to 3 years in advance. So there's obviously going to be several going on right now. You're still in the formation phase. Which ones are you following then? Are they going to need, before award, are they going to need to adopt these new class deviations, or are they just going to continue forward?
That's a really great question. So the answer, like any good lawyers, it depends, right? You knew the joke before you even said it.
That's right. Keeps us paid.
So for going forward, the easy answer on some cases is if the solicitation was not issued on February 1st, you have to change it. If you're still drafting the solicitation, class deviation comes out, you change it if those clauses are applicable. One of the things we're trying to do that Department of War is trying to do is not change the clauses themselves to the maximum extent practicable, because the Department of War, our contract writing systems take a while to change. It's not something we can just flip a switch and say class deviation issued, change the contract writing system. So there are, at least for this phase two, going to be minimal changes to the contract clauses, just because as a practical matter, we can't change our systems that fast. And so we will have to have much more extensive changes next year after the formal rulemaking, and that will take some time. There'll be probably a bit of a phase-in approach. Whenever they do come out, it's like, okay, the systems are changing, because remember, we have automated systems that we pick, we don't write the clauses by hand. Whenever those changes do come out, okay, I talked about solicitation and how that is kind of the easy snap. Okay, pre-solicitation, must change it. Mm-hmm. If the solicitation's already out, the KO needs to exercise their business judgment and say, okay, is there something that's required for me to change? Sometimes there is a statutory requirement. Usually it's, okay, what is in the best interest of the government at this point in time? But you are right, Ellie, that is absolutely something we're gonna have to deal with, of these source selections, that you may have a proposal that's been on the street for 180 days, a year, as contractors are out there trying to come up with their proposal for some of these more complex requirements and try to address the problem they're going at. And the KO will have to make a decision, say, what is not just required, but what is in the best interest of the government? And of course, make sure we document it, because that may be subject to a protest because you're changing the solicitation, and a vendor could say, I'm going to file a pre-award protest. So it's going to have to be a conversation with the contracting officer and the attorney and probably the program manager or the other requirements folks to say, what is the right course of action here? If the proposals have already come in or the bids have already come in, then no, we're not going to change things, again, unless specifically required, because at that point, if we're changing clauses that are material to the contract, to the solicitation, then we may have to go back out and get new proposals, and that's a time delay. We don't want that. So as a general rule, it's going to be a bit of a spectrum, but there is going to be a time of like, hey, yeah, we're not doing this. We're going to keep the older clauses.
Yeah, just thinking like a FAR Part 15, if someone wanted, if they wanted to change from going from best value to the new highest rated, technically rated, that's obviously going to be a huge change. Probably would have to do a new solicitation versus, oh, we're just going to not use the word clarifications anymore because we're just going to be discussions versus clarifications and discussions, no longer communications.
Yeah, so we're going to have to go through, and it's going to be a continuum of change. But that might be something where the KO says, actually, that's a good idea for me to do that. I'm willing to talk with the requirements owner and counsel and say, we're willing to take that risk, and we want to change it, because with the FAR rewrite and FAR Part 15, where they changed it, the new language they included in it, it gives more discretion to the KO in establishing the competitive range and deciding which offerors will move forward. So they might say that's worth it. But again, if you're in the middle of source selection, you're not going to do that. You're going to say, okay, we're sticking with what we have. We're moving forward. Next contract, we'll worry about that. So it's going to be a judgment call by the KOs, and something, again, they should be undertaking in consultation with counsel and the requirements owner to do what's best for the government.
So moving from that, we've talked a little bit about some of the big changes, I think, in FAR Part 15, but what are some of the other areas that you think have the biggest changes that people should be looking out for, or, be prepared for?
So the area of biggest concern for me is this idea of discretion, for a number of different reasons. Because discretion is something that is easy to do but hard to justify sometimes. And the FAR has a number of little things, potential pitfalls for the unaware KO. For example, there is FAR 19111-2 in the new model FAR that says the rule of two is subject to the discretion of the KO and it's not protestable. I have to wonder if there is a GAO attorney or a Court of Federal Claims judge who would ever agree with that. They are. I think the historical record has shown that they are going to exercise their discretion. And so I think it's a bit of a pitfall that our KOs and our attorneys need to be very mindful of. If the FAR says this is discretionary, for example, a practitioner album is supposed to be best practices for the KO to follow, and things are put in there with the intent of, well, it's discretionary, so it's not protestable. We have seen that judges, some of them, will say, okay, it's discretionary, so I'm not going to allow that to be contested. The GAO tends not to always agree with that, and the Court of Federal Claims certainly doesn't always agree with that. And so that's something that our contracting officers and our attorneys need to be thinking long and hard about, of, was this truly discretionary? Was it actually something that I actually have discretion on? And then also, there are different types of discretion. Sometimes the discretion is binary. You can choose A or you can choose B. Sometimes, like with your kids at dinner, you can eat this or you can eat that. Not eating is not an option. And our KOs need to be mindful of that. They also need to be mindful, for example, it could be there's a spectrum of discretion. There might be a multiple choice discretion. There might be a blank slate. So we have to remember what the rules are for discretion in acquisitions. In appropriations law and fiscal law, it must be specifically authorized in order to be permitted. In acquisition law, if it is not prohibited, it is permitted. The KOs have had this authority to innovate for as long as the FAR has been around, possibly back with the Defense Acquisition Regulation, the DAR, or even the ASPR, the Armed Services Procurement Regulation. It may even had that there. So they've always had this, but this iteration of the FAR places a lot of emphasis on this idea of we have to use our discretion. The KOs need to be mindful, and our attorneys should start thinking a lot more like administrative law attorneys, which administrative law, you live and die by the administrative record. If it's not written down justified, it didn't happen. And so if there's a key takeaway I want any of our listeners to have, it's that whenever they see discretion, they should be thinking, where's the memo? Because something is going to happen. The KO may move on. The KO may have forgotten, probably absolutely going to forget some of this stuff, depending on how long some of this litigation goes on. The Federal Circuit just ruled 2 weeks ago on December 5th about a case that I was involved in 2013. So some of these cases really drag on, but also the judge or the GAO bid protest attorney is going to look at it and say, what was the government's reasons for the exercise of this discretion? One area of concern for our practitioners is going to be everyone's got that lovely Gen AI link on their browser now. That's great. And our contracting officers are going to be very tempted because of the time pressure they're under to take a prompt, throw it in there and say, hey, Gen AI, write a source selection memo on this, or do this, write this justification for me. One, we have all the issues with AI and data control. But second, AI has a known hallucination rate. We know this. We know it's somewhere between 5 and 20%, depending on the model and the topic and whatnot. So with that in mind, our contracts attorneys need to take extra special care to make sure that any decision that might be challenged to the maximum extent practicable should be written down and justified and the critical points of it explained. So there is a contemporaneous record that we can point to in litigation and say, hey, this is why we did this, because our obligation at the end of the day, the United States of America is our client. We have an obligation to act in the client's interest, to protect it to the maximum extent practicable. And our KOs are instructed and required by statute to exercise that same good faith business judgment. And so we've got to be looking out for our client and making sure that whenever we see discretion, we've got it covered and that there is something in the file that says, yep, this is how we did it. Sure, you can take the risk that it's not going to be challenged, but that's a risk, and there can be potentially adverse consequences, because taking an extra couple hours or maybe a day to write a memo is certainly more effective than for perhaps having a bid protest that, you know, puts you on a seek a stay for 100 days or has you actually have to take corrective action and reverse the decision entirely. I've been a part of those. That delays you by months, potentially years. Write the memo, please.
That was a big thing in my last office was MFR. My last civilian I worked with, Ryan, I mean, he would just always say, I'm going to throw my shoe at you unless I have an MFR in my inbox in the next day. Like, it was just this thing. So yes, MFR.
No, I think it's such a key point, and contemporaneous being such a big part of that, right? Because, you know, as anybody knows, your memory is better now than it's going to be 4 years from now. But also putting that in as we're advising the client or conducting our legal reviews, asking them to make sure that they have it right at that point is going to prevent those issues longer down the line. And I like the fact that you highlighted responsible use of AI, right? Because it's not always going to be responsible use of AI out there. So we got to make sure that we're watching for that, that, you know, we're using the tools that are given to us, but we're using them the right way. We're using them responsibly. And we understand their flaws and the traps that they can have.
So we talked about what you think are the biggest changes. What are the areas you think industry is going to be commenting on or focusing in on?
So there's an interesting series of podcasts on the WIFCON. If you're on the WIFCON website, Don Ramish and some of his friends have some interesting comments, and I thought very insightful what they think are areas of flaw of where, and I expect to see some comments. Part 15, I think, is going to be very heavily commented on. I mean, in my humble opinion, that's the most important part of FAR in general.
Is, I agree.
You know, how we negotiate contracts. That's their bread and butter rules. The rest of almost everything else flows out of how well did we negotiate and go through source selection. Mm-hmm. And so I expect that to be very, very heavily commented on. FAR Part 19, small business, is definitely going to be an area of concern for a lot of folks. The administration has a lot of firm ideas about what they think about small businesses. I expect industry to say more than a few things about it. We're going to see some additional things in perhaps market research, FAR Part 8, with a lot of things moving to the GSAR. Those are, I'd say, maybe labor rates, FAR Part 22. Intellectual property isn't changing a whole lot because so much of that is already statutory. So I don't expect a lot there. There's definitely a lot of controversy involving some NDA provisions that were proposed this year, didn't make it into the final NDA. We'll see what happens in the future on that. But that's kind of where I expect the bulk of things. One thing that was kind of an interesting change was the definition of commercial service. Not product, but commercial service, now includes construction.
I was going to ask you about that. That caught me off guard, yeah.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, but that's also, and you'll think about it, makes a little bit of sense in terms of like a modular building is under the DOW rules is not supposed to last forever. A modular building is supposed to last for a fixed period of time. I believe the Army limit is 21 years, and that's it. If you've reached 21 years, tear it down and build a new building there. And that's why modular buildings are referred to as equipment. And you're not, because it's not a permanent product you're receiving, I can understand the argument. Something like that is used as a service they are providing. They are providing a service of a space for a fixed period of time, and then you're done. You tear it down, take it away. So there's certainly some nuances there. Of course, the challenge with that is that, and there were more substantive rewrites in FAR Part 36. I think that industry will have certainly some comments there. But the question becomes, do commercial clauses, and this is something we have to be careful about in general, commercial clauses, do they actually protect the government adequately, even though it may technically fit the definition of a commercial service or commercial product? For example, AI is another one that is an area of concern for me of when we use AI, we have to have things like CMMC. Well, that's not a commercial clause. Right. So even though I can go out there and I can buy, I've got a subscription to Claude, not endorsing them. This is no endorsement of Anthropic's Claude, but I have a subscription to them. Okay. The Department of War could buy a subscription to Claude in the same terms and services that I have, but that's not going to protect the Department of War's data integrity because we would require it to be sandboxed, segregated from anyone else, all kinds of things. So, and that kind of goes to an interesting little thing of what's the problem we're trying to solve in, with the new FAR? Are we grabbing the right tool out there? Because there are a lot of different tools, and we need to make certain that we are identifying the correct problem and the proper solution to address that problem and not just the shiny thing.
All right, sir. So you've been, as you mentioned, heavily involved in the Revolutionary FAR overhaul from our perspective, our being the Army's perspective on it, sitting in all of the meetings and going through. We advise commands. We're on the requiring activity side. And I'm curious, based on how in-depth you've been with all this, what advice would you have to the legal advisors to these requiring activities from the brigade up through the Corps as they're trying to navigate these new rules or how they can best set up the acquisition professionals for success under these?
If I were to pick a single thing that everyone needs to be thinking about, it's patience. Everything is changing everywhere all at once, bar the movie title. And for example, and let's put this in context, we don't have just the Revolutionary FAR overhaul. We have in the NDA Section 1802, we are changing our program executive offices to portfolio acquisition executives, PEOs to PAEs. That's a huge change, and the Army's having to make a lot of adjustments to it, so that's going on. We have the increased focus on commerciality terminations, which has always been there, but now it's been foot stomped a lot more. If we really should be looking at commercial OTAs, CSOs, before we start looking at the more traditional instruments we've been using. So there are a lot of those changes going on. There are more that Senator Wicker, who's chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, has expressed interest in passing and acting through the NDAAs, the National Defense Authorization Acts. So there's a lot of different changes that have happened and will continue to do so. And so for our listeners, the overriding principle that I would emphasize again is just being patient for the SJAs who are advising at the brigade or the corps level, for our practitioners at PEOs and the Corps of Engineers, wherever they may be. It would simply be take the time to understand that you're not going to get it all at once. There may not have been necessarily as many substantive changes as there were on the surface. When you dig into it, it's like, okay, this move from Part 8 to the GSAR, mm-hmm. this moved around the formatting, but the substance of the law didn't do. But I'm concerned that a lot of folks will get overwhelmed right away by saying, oh my gosh, everything changed. There's no way I can understand all this. And I'd just like to emphasize that, hey guys, we're all kind of in the same boat. Yeah. But two, we are putting out information. Just I like to foot stomp the ADK. You've got your wonderful Teams channel. I've collaborated a lot with you on that channel. And we're holding webinars in the future. We will continue to push out information. And I just wish everyone could understand that we all need to be patient together and getting through this. It's going to take time to change the culture, to everyone to get their head around these changes, to find out where exactly this new thing is in FAR. Okay, it used to be here in FAR 6.302. It's now in FAR 6.301. Mm-hmm. And so just give ourselves and everyone else a little bit of grace. Like, we're going to make some mistakes. We're going to get through this together. But that's kind of, for me, the key takeaway is that a little bit of an attitude adjustment of just working together as a team, being patient with each other as a team to get the job done. And we'll get there. Just got to take a little more time to figure things out along the way.
I think that's great advice and one that we talk about quite a bit here. Communication, especially in the legal community, between the requiring activity and our contract support brigades or whoever those authorities are. I've always found that the legal tech change or the legal communication has far outpaced a lot of the other, you know, department sections, even command communication change. So I think that's a key part going forward.
Yeah, and that's something I'm trying to get ahead on from the very beginning. The Army was actually the only service that put together a team of attorneys to review the entire RFO. They've done bits, other services have done bits and pieces, but we actually have about a dozen attorneys that have spent an enormous amount of time, including some of our friends from OTJAG, from what was then AFC, now T2COM, AMC, Corps of Engineers, all contributed, some incredibly talented attorneys who went through, identified various areas of concern. We've contributed several hundred comments at this point to the FAR Council of things that we are concerned about in the new rewrite. We'll continue to do so. And we're continuing to get information out there. We've held, I think, two webinars this past year on the FAR overhaul. We're going to hold another one in January sometime, and we will hold more throughout the upcoming year just to make sure that we are communicating to our practitioners. Because, and the reason we're putting so much emphasis on this communication aspect is that we expect many of our KOs are going to come to our contracts attorneys and say, please mm-hmm. help. Here's this new FAR. I don't know where stuff is. That's right. And so we are trying to get information out there to communicate, to make sure we have places where people can ask questions. And for all of our listeners, if you're an Army attorney, I would highly recommend you join the ADK Teams channel. It's a wonderful place, lots of great information there, lots of good community to ask other practitioners, where is this? I think that sort of communication has become even more important as we implement the RFO for people to say, hey, help me out. Where do I go to find more information about this? We have our procurement.army.mil website, which is from the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Procurement, DASAP. I get the acronym correct. That's her website, and they push out a lot of information there. But and then they also just don't be afraid to ask and say, help. I don't know where it is. My client's asking me for help. That's what we're here for at Higher Headquarters, is to try and help you out there a little bit more and to share that information, learn who to phone the friend, figure out who's the guy, the person, your attorney in your office that has this figured out. And let's work together to help build this up and to share that information. I've got a slide deck. I'm happy to pass along to someone if they reach out to me. I've used it several times to train people on this is where we are in the RFO. I keep it pretty updated, and you know, we can share that information to make sure that our listeners have the toolkit they need to be successful. That's what we're all about, is supporting the warfighters. And we all understand the folks out in the field at the brigade level, the PEOs, they're the tip of the spear. They're the ones who are actually doing all the real action. At headquarters, I'm just sitting there, you know, thinking big thoughts.
Yeah, but, and this isn't going to surprise anybody who listened to more than one episode of this, I'm usually the one calling for help, and I've always appreciated you picking up the phone, so that's very helpful.
Anytime.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Cottle. This was fascinating and a lot of insight, I think, for everyone listening. Thank you for joining us today on this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
And you don't have to just take our word from it. You just heard from OGC that ADK is the place to find all the information that you need going forward. We'll make sure we have all the links in our show notes. Look forward to hearing from you next time.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.